Welcome to the Real Estate Investing Club. This is the place everyday real estate investors gather to share their best stories, biggest insights, and favorite tactics to grow a portfolio of cash flowing properties in today's market. Here's your host, Gabe Peterson.
All right. Happy Wednesday, everybody. It's probably not Wednesday when you guys are listening to this, but it is Wednesday here. So I hope whatever day it is for you, I hope you're having a good one. This is going to be a good episode because we have Sharad Mehta with us from RE Simply, which is an CRM platform for investors. Sharad has done over 750 deals. He does about 50 deals per year. And his claim to fame is that he only spends about an hour per day running his entire real estate flipping and property management business. I am all about reducing the amount of time, getting more leverage on the time that you put into your business. Sounds like Sharad has cracked the code. And so I'm super excited to jump into this, Sharad. Thank you very much for hopping on the show.
Hey, Gabe. Thank you so much for having me on the show, man. Super excited to talk about real estate.
Absolutely. Before we get into the nitty gritty of how you're running your business, we like to start with stories. I know you got a good one, so take us to the beginning of your real estate story and just tell us, how did you get into real estate?
So I used to be an accountant. I was working for an accounting firm, and I've always been into personal finance and just was really wanted to have freedom of time and money. So looked at all different options, looked at investing in stocks and bonds, just couldn't deal with the ups and downs, wanted to be a full-time poker player at one point.
Oh,
and
cool.
Yeah. I don't have the poker face for it. and then got turned on to real estate, and I'm like, yeah, this is kind of what I want to do. So bought my first 2-unit property in August 2010, rental property. I still own it to this day, and then just kind of got started from there.
Awesome, man. So poker player, that's pretty cool. I used to play poker with my friends like way back in high school, but I was never any good at it. So if you can run that game, that's pretty sweet. So 2010, that's a long time ago, and that's right after the crash. What kind of property did you buy at the very beginning? Just the single family?
I bought one to four units, mostly 2-3 units initially, and then after a couple of years, transitioned into single family.
Okay, cool. Sweet. So I'm sure at the beginning you weren't doing, 50 deals a year. I'm sure it started very slowly and you built up to that. So I really want to focus this episode on kind of how on the evolution, I guess, of your company and your real estate investing, and how it went from that very beginning where you did, one deal and then went to number two. I'm sure you're putting a lot of time into it. And how you went from there to doing 50 deals a year with only doing 1 hour a day in work. So let's take first deal. I'm sure you got it. Where'd you get it? Did you get it off market?
No, right on MLS, listed for $65,000. And I think I got it for like $20,000 and put about 10, 15 into it. I think I was all in for 35, rented it out for $1,300, the two units combined.
It was a duplex that you got for 35,000?
Yeah, 35 all in. Yeah.
Where'd you buy this?
It's in Indiana. Still own the property. Yeah. It paid itself over many times. Yeah.
Nice. Very cool. And you were at the time, were you living in California?
Chicago.
Oh, you're in Chicago. Okay. So it's a lot closer to you. Indiana. I love Indiana. We're focused on Indianapolis. Still a great market, even though prices have gone significantly higher than they were in 2010.
That's everywhere. Yeah.
Okay, so you bought that first unit. Tell us, how did you start to grow your business after that?
So I had some money saved up from my wife and I. We were both working, so we had some money saved up. So first two or three properties we used our own money to buy. Then I started doing some, borrowing money from friends and families, and I was very aggressive in paying these properties down. So I was doing 7-year amortization with 2-year balloon payment. Just wanted to be very aggressive about paying these down. And then in 2012, end of 11, early 12, I started working with an Australian company. The Australian dollar was very strong against the US dollar, you know, back then. So you had a lot of overseas investors buying in the US. So I started working with them and started selling like hundreds of properties to them, and then just kind of scaled my business. Yeah, wholesale. Yeah. I mean, it wasn't necessarily wholesale. I was working with this company. So this was a marketing company selling to local investors. So I was working with them and they were helping them find properties. And, you know, I was getting percentage of the profit and all the money I was making from those deals, I was putting into buying more rental properties for myself.
Yep.
And then, I mean, it was easy to find deals back then on MLS. You didn't really have to do any off-market deal. So did a lot of that. 2015 is when I moved from Chicago to San Diego area where I live now. And that's when I started looking at systems and processes that I needed in my business. I realized how much inefficiency there was in my business. And, you know, previously, if there was an issue, I would just drive down from Chicago to Indiana, which is about 30, 45 minutes drive, to meet with a contractor. But now that I was living in San Diego area, I couldn't do that. So I started looking at more systems and processes. And that's where the idea of Resimply came from, just, you know, system to manage the entire business.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's especially people that are on the coasts in markets, you know, San Diego, Seattle, the purchase prices are, you know, 400, 500,000 and above. It's really difficult to, well, it's nearly impossible to buy properties in our markets that cash flow. And so you do have to invest. You have to invest virtually. It's the only other option if you want to see some kind of cash on cash return. And so being able to do the virtual investing is so important, but it's also tricky to do it right and to know that you have the right pieces in place. So when you moved to San Diego and you started setting up your business 100% virtual, not having any of your own boots on the ground, what were the first few pillars that you stood up to make sure to ensure that you had quality? And let's I know there's a number of different pillars that we can talk about. So let's talk about construction side of things. So when you're buying properties and you're doing flips, how did you make sure that you had the right contractors in place? How did you make sure that you were buying the properties that you were buying were good properties, even though you couldn't put eyes on them?
I mean, I had a relationship with local agents, you know, who would give me their feedback on the property that I was buying. And then I'd built a relationship with contractors while I was living in Chicago. So that helped. But for me, the key was coming up with systems and processes that I could repeat from one property to another. For example, we built out, you know, a list of flooring that we're going to use, the paint color, the faucet, the light fixtures, and all those things we built out. And so when we were going from one flip to another, we didn't even have to think about what we needed to put down. It was just already automated. And then once I had the systems built out, then the next key part, the most important part for me, that's been for me, is finding the right person, which is my project manager, Claudia. She lives like an hour north of me and she's managing everything virtually from California. She's been with me for 7 years now. Mm-hmm. And yeah, she's the one who's managing everything day to day. And that's been a huge, huge hire for me. So for me, I would say,
and so Claudia, she's a she's your project manager, or what is what's her role in your business?
I mean, she's like everything. You know, she's managing all the projects, she's managing the deals that we should be buying. I mean, we have a lead manager, acquisition manager also, who's calling the sellers, but it's I trust Claudia. So if she tells me, hey, we're going to buy this property, this is how much money we're going to make, I don't even look at it. I'm like, okay, let's just go in and buy it. So that's how much trust I have in working with Claudia. She gets a percentage of the profit. You know, we've made our incentives aligned really well. So it's been a really, really great partnership working with Claudia. So yeah, I wouldn't be where I am without, you know, her being part of the business. She has access to the bank account, everything. I don't even know the contractors we're working with. Like if a contractor showed up on this call, I wouldn't even know that they work for us. I don't even know their names. There's no value add in me knowing their name. She flies out once every 6 months to meet the contractors, build the relationships, but I don't even talk to contractors. They've never talked to me. It works. I mean, Claudia manages all of that. Okay. So yeah, I would say like building the systems and processes and then finding the right person to manage those systems and processes. And I like at a very high level, I look at the KPIs within Breezimply to make sure everything, the money we expect to make, you know, our cost per deal and all that good stuff, ROI is going in the right direction.
Yep. So how do you, I mean, it sounds like Claudia is a very big portion of your success. And, you know, having good teammates, having good, good hires in your company, it really does, you know, it makes it day and night. It really pushes your business forward. So how'd you go about finding her?
Craigslist. So, yeah, when I first moved to the area, she was living about 10, 15 minutes from where I was living. So I moved to the San Diego area and I thought, hey, I needed someone, you know, to work from the office. So she would come in 3 days. I had a home office. She would come in 3 days a week. And after a week, I said, Claudia, you know, you don't need to come in 3 days, just come in 2 days. And then after that, just a day, like, you know what, you can just work from home. You're doing a good job. And then it COVID just kind hit of,
and you're like, you know what, don't even come in.
I was like, way before COVID, like this is like 2017. I'm like, yeah, just work from home. You know, as long as you're doing everything you need to, I don't really need to see you. I would see her like once every 3-4 months just because she was living 15 minutes from where I was living. But now she lives an hour north. And I'd moved to Canada in 2020, moved back in July, 7 months ago, and haven't seen her in 7 months since I moved back. I mean, the relationship that we have, she's doing what she needs to do. You know, she's happy. I don't micromanage. You know, she tells me what property we need to buy, how much we're going to buy for, how much we're going to sell for. I'm like, yeah, you go ahead, do all that.
Yeah, that's somebody that is competent and you can trust. That's definitely somebody you want on your team. Why'd you move to, this is kind of an aside, but why'd you move to Canada?
For my wife's job. Then she got a transfer back to San Diego area. So we moved back.
What part of Canada?
Toronto.
Toronto. Nice. I only asked that because we literally this weekend we got back from a trip to Victoria. I absolutely love Victoria. It's one of my favorite cities. Super beautiful.
Yeah.
Okay, going back to the discussion, you're talking about Claudia. So 1 hour a day, it sounds like, is what you put into your business. Take me through that 1 hour. What are the key, you know, you as the founder, the CEO, the person that's driving the business forward, what are the key tasks that you try to make sure are taken care of every day, every week, every month to drive your business forward?
It's actually 1 hour a week, not 1 hour a day.
Very nice. Yeah,
So my time is just 10 minutes doing a huddle every morning with Claudia and Jay. So Claudia is my project manager. Jay is my acquisition lead manager. He lives in Philippines. Just 10 minutes a day, just checking in, making sure everything is going good. That's pretty much it. And then, you know, they'll call me or text me if there's something that needs my attention. But mostly they need me, you know, when, like, I need to sign some documents on buying and closing. So what we've done really well is, again, like, build systems and processes. So when we're flipping houses, we're either flipping to a homeowner, your traditional flip, or we're flipping, you know, renting it out and selling it to a landlord, you know, investor. Yeah. So for us, it's very simple. Like, all we need to know is, hey, are we selling it to an investor? Then this is what it needs to look like. If you're selling it as a flip, these are, you know, a little bit higher end finishes that need to go in. And again, I don't manage that. I don't even know what our flips end up looking like. I don't even see the before after picture. It's like Claudia manages. We've done like hundreds of flips together. So she knows what she's doing. All I want to know is how much money we're going to make on this project. And then I look at the end of the project, you know, did we make that money or not? And then, she gets her percentage of the profit on every single deal.
Very cool. So it's a 3-man team. It sounds like you, Claudia, and then you mentioned, did you say Jay?
Yeah.
Your acquisitions manager in the Philippines?
Correct.
Very cool. Having a solid acquisitions manager is definitely important. So it sounds like the majority of that 1 hour that you spend per week is really just meeting with your team and then reviewing the financial KPI. Not necessarily, you're not interfacing with any of the contractors, you're not interfacing with, you know, brokers or anything like that. It's just meeting with your team, 10 minutes in the morning. Do you have any, like, this is going back in the corporate days, but any like MBRs that you look at, or any, you know, dashboards that you that you've built over the course of the of your business?
Yeah, so we have we have dashboards built within recently. So we just look at that. We just look at our pipeline of deals that we have. Just go over, hey, what does this house look like? Are we going to move forward or not? You know, if we did not buy something, why is it that we not? Why didn't we buy that? So just like going over the pipeline and looking at the market. I mean, the KPIs at a high level.
Yeah. What markets are you in right now?
Just one, Northwest Indiana.
Oh, just Lake County. Northwest yeah. Indiana. Okay.
Northwest Indiana.
What big cities in Northwest Indiana?
It's right outside Chicago. So you have Hammond, Highland, Meadowville.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Gary. Yeah.
Okay. Gotcha. Oh, yeah. Gary. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I was just trying to picture it in my head. As I mentioned, we really like Indianapolis. So we've been looking at other metros in Indiana. I just like the state. I feel like price points are pretty good. And
absolutely. And
things actually cash flow, which is great. So when you're making offers on the properties, do you guys have just rules of thumb when you're looking at the ARV? Are you doing like 70% minus repairs, or do you have
pretty much 70% minus repairs, and then my acquisition person, if he gets it below that number, then he gets a little bit of incentive. The ARV would come from an agent, rehab number would come from Claudia. And then based on that, we'll come up with our maximum offer. And then acquisition manager, if he gets it, you know, below that number, then he gets a little bit of incentive.
Very cool.
Yeah. For me, I would look at, once we sell the project, hey, did the ARV that we initially set, did that make sense? You know, the rehab number that we have, did we go over or under?
Yep. And do you quote your rehab on a, you know, dollar per square foot basis, or I'm sure you got something a little bit more refined now that you've done so many flips.
We have our contractors, before we actually close on anything, our contractors go out, look at it and give us a detailed bid. If we're going to do a retail flip, they'll give us a bid based on that. And if we want to sell it to an investor as a turnkey property, then they would give us a bid on that. But if it, like, you know, kind of 50-50 or on the fence about which way we want to go, then they'll give us two bids. Say, if you want to do rehab, retail flip, this is how much it's going to be. If you're going to do turnkey, and then we'll look at the numbers, if we retail ARV versus turnkey ARV, make decisions based on that.
Yeah. We're actually entering a new market, just because my partner's out in the Northeast. And so in Buffalo, New York, we got a deal, never done a flip there before. And so I got multiple quotes from different contractors. One contractor who came as a referral, and people said he's really good. He said he gave us a quote of $21,000 for, we're going to add another unit, to add this second unit. And the other contractors came in at $100,000. And it's just, sometimes I have no idea where these contractors are getting their numbers. So it makes you, realize that once you get a good contractor, you got to stick with them, because it's difficult to find good ones.
Yeah. I mean, that's like the biggest mistake you can make is overpay for a property. Once you've overpaid for a property, there's nothing you can do. I mean, I'm not saying any kids, but let's say if you calculated a number based on the $21,000 rehab, but it actually turns out it's going to need $100,000, then you're like, oh shoot, you know, there's nothing you can do after you bought the property. So you need to be spot on with your ARV, you need to be spot on with your the contractor repairs. I mean, you can always add like 5-10% buffer. Sometimes we're a little bit conservative. Like, we sold a property last month. We thought our ARV would be 215. We ended up selling for 235 before we even listed it on the market. So, I mean, it went up in the last 6 months. Just the market became more competitive in the area where we bought. But, you know, that's where you kind of, it could have been, if it were 195 instead of 235, then we're like, oh shoot, you know, we missed the boat on that.
Yep. You make your money when you buy, that's for sure.
100%.
All right. Well, we already have gone through our period. It is time to jump in the quick question round. But before we do that, I wanted to ask about RESimpli. That is your CRM system that you guys built. Tell us a little bit about it. What's unique about it, and why, where can people find it? And then why should they consider it over other platforms?
Yeah. I mean, so they can find more about it at resimpli.com. So what's unique about RESimpli is I started it as something that I needed for myself. So there were a couple of things that were important. I used to be an accountant. So the data, the KPIs had to be really spot on. especially as I was looking in my business, I was investing from out of state. I wanted to make decisions based on the numbers, not based on someone's opinion about how the business was going. So that it had to be very simple to use, and it had to be one software that could run everything. I didn't want to have a software where I'm integrating a bunch of different platforms, and that was our goal, and that's what we're doing right now. We have thousands of investors that are using our platform, and it's been absolutely amazing.
Very cool, man. Having a good CRM system is, again, yep, night and day. Some of them are really bad. I've gone through a lot of them. I started out with Podio. Podio is great because it's free, and when you don't have any money, you're just starting out. It definitely,
yeah, but you
job.
Get what you pay for. Come on, Podio sucks. Yeah, you can be honest.
All right, it's time to jump into the quick question round. Are you ready?
Yes, let's go.
All right, it starts with education. Any form of education, could be books, could be movies, could be Netflix shows, YouTube channels, whatever. I just need two recommendations, one for general life wisdom and then one for real estate.
Book, I would say the one that got me started was Millionaire Real Estate Investor.
That's Pop and Son, then, right?
I forgot the author. It was just the book was good. And then on the personal side, I would say the book Meditations by Marcus Aurelius, on Stoicism. That's been fantastic.
That is my absolute favorite book. I love that book.
Yeah.
All right. Next question is for your younger self. So let's go back to the Sherrod who was just buying that first property back in, what was it, 2010? 2010. Go back to him, look in the eye, give him one piece of advice moving forward.
Set bigger goals.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. And give me a concrete example of that.
You know, I think like when I started out, instead of thinking that, hey, if I get to, you know, like $1,000 per month in cash flow in 3 months, you know, it would be fantastic. Like, why not set the goal at 10x? You know, say, hey, how do I get to 10,000 a month in cash flow by this date? So I think that's where I was just not setting big enough goals for myself. You know, I was content with, like, I was making about 75, 80,000 a year when I left my job. So in my mind, my goal was to replace my income. It should have been, how do I get to 500,000 instead of like 70,000, 80,000? It should have been, how do I get to 500,000 per year, you know, in cash flow? So I think that's where then your thought process changes. You're not thinking about getting to this goal of 70, 80,000. There's nothing wrong with that. But if you set a much higher goal, then your thought process changes. And the people that you need to work with, the team that you need to have, the systems that you need to have, it all aligns to a bigger goal.
Yeah. Yeah, that goes back to the mindset thing. I'm always dubious when people talk about mindset, because a lot of it is kind of frou-frou, but it is absolutely true that, you know, if you set a goal, your mind will kind of orient itself towards that goal and come up with the solutions itself. And if you set a small goal, that is where your mind will go. It's not going to let you see past that. So setting bigger goals, I love that. All right, next question is for, let's see. Metros, US, it's a big place, a lot of opportunity. You mentioned Northwest Indiana. So give me a single city, a single metro that you're most excited about investing in today.
Hammond, Indiana.
Hammond, Indiana. All right. That is Southeast Chicago, essentially.
Yeah, pretty much.
Nice. Why Hammond?
I mean, I know the market. I own a bunch of rentals there. Great, solid neighborhood, has seen good appreciation, cash flow has been good, and, you know, I know the market, like, we could just buy properties based on, you know, the square footage, bedroom, bathroom, and don't have to think much about it.
Yeah. All right, next question is about finding deals. It all starts with getting in contact with the seller. So what's your favorite way to generate leads and find new deals?
Say direct mail for outbound and PPC for inbound.
All right. Both definitely solid ways to generate leads. PPC, I don't think I've cracked the code there. I definitely have spent money, but the ROI for PPC is not as good as direct mail and cold calling on our end, but it's mostly because I think I just am not as good at them as other people. So
yeah, PPC can be tough depending on the market. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Next question is biggest lessons learned. You've done 750 plus deals. I'm sure some of them went a little bit different than you expected. But in those deals, that's where you get the best lessons that you take on to the next deal. So what was the deal that went a little sideways for you? And then what was the biggest lesson you took from that?
I mean, I think getting outside of my lane, you know, just being a little overconfident, you know, not doing enough due diligence. I think we ended up losing like 25,000-30,000 on that deal. That was one. And yeah, I mean, there's another one where we lost about 30,000-40,000 just as the interest rate started going up. We usually buy our properties in 250-300 ARV. This one property we bought was ARV of 700,000. Most expensive property for us. And the you know, I mean, the spread would have been 100,000, but just definitely outside of our lane, bought the property. And then when we listed it, the interest rate started going up and eventually had to sell it. You know, if I factor in the holding cost and everything, definitely lost over $50,000 on that. So yeah, just sticking to our lane, that's what's been working for us.
Yeah, those luxury deals are dangerous, in my opinion. Yeah. If you're not like focusing on them, I got a buddy here in Seattle who does only luxury and he crushes it, but he knows the market really well. And a luxury deal is it's hard because, you know, that's when you're getting into personal preference and people, you know, some people might pay $1 million for a property where another one would only pay 500. So
100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that was something we realized, but it was a good lesson, you know, just kind of keeping us on our path.
Yep, exactly. All right, that brings us to the very last question. You've already mentioned this a little bit, but you've given us a lot to think about, and I'm sure people want to reach out, get in contact with you. Where can they find you? And what is, that's it. Where can they find you? What's the best way for the people to reach out?
I'm not super active on any social media. I don't have Instagram or anything, but you know, I do check my Facebook because we have a Facebook group for Recently, so they can find me on Facebook, Sharad Mehta. And or they can email me sharad@resimply.com.
All right, perfect. I will put those links in the show notes. If y'all want to reach out, just click the little more in the description. It'll pull down that full description, and in there you can find Sharad's links. All right, man, that wraps it up. Thank you very much for hopping on the show.
Thank you, Gabe, for having me on. It's been great.
Absolutely. For everybody who's here with us today, thank you guys for showing up. You are the reason we do this. So if you guys have any questions whatsoever, reach out to me, Gabe, at therealestateinvestingclub.com. If you want to support the show, give us a like, subscribe, share, all that jazz. Other than that, I hope you guys have a great week. Keep rocking real estate, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode. All right, before I officially sign off, I have a quick announcement to make. If you're interested in becoming a passive investor in one of my deals, my own company, Kaizen Properties, is looking for capital partners for our upcoming projects. We invest in what are known as recession-resistant assets, mainly self-storage facilities, mobile home and RV parks, and industrial properties. If you're interested in investing and would like to learn a little bit more about my company, our investing criteria, and some of the previous projects we've done, go to the Real Estate Investing Club podcast at therealestateinvestingclub.com and scroll all the way down to the bottom of the page. Click on the Invest With Us button. That'll pop up the investor form. Fill that out and we will reach back out to you as soon as we can. Or if you prefer a little bit more of a personal touch, you can reach out to me at gabe@therealestateinvestingclub.com. So really, that is it. Again, it was a pleasure hanging out with you guys during this episode, and I look forward to seeing you on the next episode.